The process of introducing our speaker starts with an apology to him. His name is misspelled in your program. It's Marbro. Marbo. Mirbo. Mirbo. M-Y-R-B-O. Craig, our apologies to you for that. Craig is a recently retired asthma activist member, Ben Stewart. He's a member of the board of the directors of the Interfaith Council for Worker Justice and a member of the Sherman Avenue Methodist United Methodists. And his talk today, we just sang it, is Stand By Me. Craig?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you all for Math for getting me here, Peter for helping arrange this, all of you for listening to me as I speak today. Tomorrow is Labor Day, national holiday set aside to honor workers. I'm speaking here today on behalf of the Interfaith Coalition for Worker Justice of South Central Wisconsin. The ICWJ is a coalition of unions, faith groups, and concerned individuals both in the faith and labor communities and other organizations that educates and mobilizes faith and labor communities on behalf of workers, especially low-wage workers. For information on our work and programs, you can stop by on the table outside the door for some brochures, a sign-up sheet, volunteer sheets, or go to workerjustice, that's all one word, .org. We are a local affiliate of the national organization Interfaith Worker Justice. An important component of fulfilling our mission is coordinating the annual Labor in the Pulpits program. Labor in the Pulpits puts labor speakers in pulpits across the country in churches, synagogues, and mosques. I'm speaking here today as part of that this year's program. I retired on June 30th after almost 40 years of state service. During my entire career, I was active in my union. I will begin by reviewing the last 6 months. Starting in the middle of February of this year and continuing through the winter and spring and summer, thousands upon thousands of people converged on the Capitol building here in Madison. Day after day, week after week, month in, month out. In the morning, in the middle of the day, in the evening, sometimes late at night, sometimes into the wee hours of the morning, in fair weather and foul, we showed up. We marched, we sang, we prayed, we carried signs, we listened to speeches, we kept on showing up again and again and again. The number of participants ebbed and swelled and ebbed and swelled as time has gone on. Hundreds of us, thousands of us, hundreds of thousands of us at a time. I participated in these actions as early as February 11th in organizing the first protest to as late as last Thursday, August 25th. I will continue to do so. I'll be giving my perspective as an active participant as why this has happened. I'll try to show how this connects to faith traditions and people of faith. Why did I do so? Why am I so adamantly union? Because someone stood by me. That's what unions do. In the video, Playing for Change, the late street musician Roger Ridley introduced the Ben E. King song that you just sang with the following words. This song says, no matter who you are, no matter where you go in life, at some point you're going to need somebody to stand by you. Stand by me. And the night has come and the way is dark and the moon is the only light we see. I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid. Just as long as people come and stand by me. The organizer in the film, Norma Rae, states that when his grandfather died, his mother and his father attended the funeral, his uncles attended the funeral, his aunt attended the funeral, and so did 862 members of his union, also members of his family. They stood by him. Norma Rae is a work of fiction, but it's based on facts. The scene may not have happened in real life exactly as portrayed in the film, but it is truth. I know. I've been there. When I needed somebody to stand by me, two groups in my life did, my church and my union. In January of 1978, I made a serious mistake on my job. I was fired. My union stood by me. My steward took the case and filed a grievance. The grievance was denied by the state and then appealed to arbitration by the union. After 4 months, the arbitrator ruled that what I had done did not warrant termination, but warranted discipline, and so reinstated me without back pay or benefits. During this psychological, emotional, and personal economic crisis, my church and my union stood by me. Later on, when I was injured on the job, my union was there. In my job transition to a job that didn't involve heavy lifting, my union was there. When I had other medical problems, my union was there. I have tried to pass this on. I have become adamantly union because of the examples of others. I have realized that the same instincts that motivated me as a person of faith motivated me as a union labor activist. The motto of the industrial workers of the world, a radical labor union early in the 20th century, still in existence, by the way, an injury to one is an injury to all, is actually a reworking of the thought expressed in the first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 12. That we are all parts of the same body, and when one suffers, all suffer. Unions call this solidarity. In essence, unions standing together for the betterment of all workers. There is a strong strand in all faith traditions in support of fairness and equity, especially for the poor and workers. I notice one of your seven principles. We believe in justice, equity, and compassion. The working out of that strand in unions through solidarity. My case is by no means unique. Last year, the ex-president of our local, AFSCME New York Local 145, passed away. In the executive board meeting, it was noted by several members that he saved their well in church, I'll say, behind. He saved a lot of those. As a local, we gave to the memorial and attended the wake and the funeral. Pat, in his life, was an active steward and president of our local. He was also active at St. Peter's Catholic Church on Madison's north side. There are many connections between faith and labor. In February 1968, two sanitation workers were crushed to death in the back of a garbage truck in Memphis, Tennessee. Those sanitation workers, their people that stand by them, went on strike. The Reverend Martin Luther King joined in that struggle, a struggle for economic justice and dignity. Martin Luther King was killed standing by the workers. On the 43rd anniversary of King's assassination, on a cold April 4th evening in Madison, Wisconsin, in the Capitol Square, I was profoundly privileged to carry the ICWJ banner with Jesse Jackson and two members of that sanitation workers union in afternoon 1733 in their support of us in solidarity. Faith and labor traditions are well entwined. The relationship between faith and labor goes back before this year, before last year, before 1968, before 1978, way, way back. Let me tell you a story. A long time ago, there was a man who fled the authorities for a crime he had committed. Much later, he felt the call to help the people who were his people who were overworked and underpaid. At first, their demands were simple: time off to worship God and rest. As is typical in such struggles, production quotas were increased. The workers had to supply their own raw materials. After a series of increasingly disruptive job actions, the demands were met. Plus, the workers were given substantial bonuses. The workers took off for their much-needed time rest. But the employer had second thoughts and attempted to use the army to force the workers back to work. Moses was that labor leader. I have just summarized the first 14 chapters of the book of Exodus in the Torah. The Hebrew Scriptures, second book in the Christian Bible. The union movement has three things that are bargained for: wages, hours, and working conditions. Slavery is no wages, unlimited hours, horrible working conditions. Labor issues matter to faith traditions. Walter Brueggemann, Old Testament scholar and writer, wrote this book called Prayers for a Privileged People. He contemplated the stories that I just summarized in his book, Prayers for Privileged People. Brick production. We need to be reminded of the ones who lack voice, or whose voice we do not often hear. We think them unlike us, but they are our neighbors: the widows, the orphans, the immigrants, the poor, the laborers, the prisoners, the slaves, the addicts. They are the ones who dwell in places short of mercy, absent of justice, defaulted of gifts of life. They are noticed by acutely by God. Are they noticed by us? A prayer of protest. Since our mothers and fathers cried out, since you have heard their cry and notice, since we left the brick production of Egypt, since you foiled the production schedules of Pharaoh, we have known your name. We have sensed your passion. We have treasured your vision of justice. We now turn to you again, whose precious name we know. We turn to you because there are still impossible production schedules, still exploitative systems, still cries of pain and injustice, still cheap labor that yields misery. We turn to you in impatience and exasperation, wondering how long before you answer our pleading question, hear our petition, since you are not a labor boss and do not set wages. We bid you stir up those who can change things. Do your stirring in the jaded halls of government. Do your stirring in the cynical offices of corporation. Do your stirring in amid the voting public too anxious to care. Do your stirring in the church that thinks too much about purity and not enough about wages. Move as you moved in the ancient Egyptian days. Move the waters and the flocks of the herds towards new statutes and regulations, towards new equity and good health care, new dignity that cannot be given on the cheap. We know long since you reject cheap grace. Even now we know you reject cheap labor. God of justice and dignity, equity, keep your promises you embodied in Jesus. The poor may be first-class citizens of our society, that the needy may have good care and respect, that the poor earth may rejoice in well-being, that we may all come Sabbath rest together, owner and worker, leisure class and labor class, all at peace in dignity and justice, not in the cheap, but in good measure, pressed down, running over. So why did we keep on showing up? Taking away in Act 10 of our rights and dignity, reducing our pay, and forcing hard economic choices. Thursday, August 25th, the last time that I was in the square, not the last time, but the last time I will intend to continue, was Impact Day. It was the first biweekly check of the larger state employee contributions to health insurance and retirement came out. A state employee I know had $208 taken out for health insurance and $125.73 taken out for retirement. Paycheck was $240.99 less than the previous check. Those deductions were $68 previously and $4.32. Some lower paid state employees in clerical, in blue collar, on the university campus have to decide whether to drop health insurance coverage or feed their kids or pay the mortgage. Some state employees make as little as $12 an hour. We need voice on worker, on wages, hours, and working condition. We need somebody to stand by us. No matter who you are, no matter where you go in life, you're going to need somebody to stand by you. In the workplace, it's probably a brother, union brother or sister. We call this solidarity. Will you stand by me? Thank you.
Our closing words are from Howard Zinn. If we do act, in however a small way, we don't have to wait for some grand utopian future. The future is an infinite succession of presents. And to live now, as we think human beings should live, in defiance of all that is bad around us, is itself a marvelous victory.